Welcome to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. I'm Tim Friedman, your host, along with fellow Clevelander rock expert Frank Ost. Frankie, how are you?
I'm great. It's great to be here.
Our continuing series, More From Badfinger, is this week's featured artist. As
Absolutely.
We start thinking about closing out Season 3, Stevie Wonder is going to be our featured artist next week. We'd like to close out the season with a big show, you know, a big bang. We had, not the Big Bang Theory, but Stevie Wonder, this time around, we closed out Season 1 with talk about Woodstock.
That's right.
And maybe one of these seasons we're going to talk about the World Series of Rock, because you and I were both at a couple, maybe even tripped over each other and didn't even know it.
Could have possibly been, yeah, definitely.
So, Frankie, the sad news coming down last Friday, Meat Loaf passed away from complications from COVID at age 74. Would have been 75 this September. Those big hits, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights, 2 out of 3 Ain't Bad, all revved up from that legendary album, which Todd Rundgren produced, Bad Out of Hell. Later on, I would do anything for love, but I wouldn't do that. It's like that 9-minute song is a great song. So, Meat Loaf. He was also in the movie Rocky Horror Picture Show. Meat Loaf passed away last week. This week in rock history, this day, January 24th, 1962, Brian Epstein. Epstein? I still don't know.
I don't know either.
He signed with the Beatles, who we know how to pronounce their name, as their manager, ditching their leather jacket look for more appealing matching suits and bow ties to the audience. And the mop tops, they were nice boys.
Yes, absolutely.
Nice boys, the gray with the thin ties. Epstein got, get this, 25% of what they earned, far above the usual 10%.
Is that true? I never realized that.
It's amazing. He died at, what, 37 years old?
Very young.
Jethro Tull played its first U.S. concert at New York City's Fillmore East, nice venue,
yeah,
1969,
absolutely.
Opening for Blood, Sweat, and Tears. That would be a good show.
Now, that would be a very good show, and that was the kind of show that you used to get back then.
Yeah.
You know, very eclectic tastes.
Yeah, you wouldn't put those two together, but
no.
You walk out of there with a big smile on your face.
Oh, absolutely.
And you're entertained. Mm-hmm. Diana Ross sang the national anthem at Super Bowl XVI. Quick, what was that one, 1982?
Oh, okay.
It was in the freezing cold of Silverdome, remember? Nobody could get there.
Was that San Francisco?
Yeah, in Cincinnati.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Remember that one? Like, nobody could get there because it was, like, 0 degrees and wind chills, and Pontiac, Michigan's, like, way out.
Right. Pontiac is it's north of the city, and I think they did it just to placate the car companies because of all their advertising
yeah.
over the years.
But undaunted, they've held other Super Bowls in places like Minneapolis.
They have.
And New York. It's funny because when they had it in New York City, big stink was made about it. And the next day, they had a blizzard. In 1995, released their final album with Sammy Hagar called Balance. Do you have that in your collection?
I do not.
Me either. Birthdays, Ray Stevens, The Streak, Katarzan, Everything is Beautiful.
Okay,
good entertainer.
Yeah.
He turns
absolutely.
82 today. Sorry, 83. Neil Diamond turns 81 today.
Okay. Wow, 81. Oh, Lordy.
Aaron Neville is also 81. Sharon Tate was born on this day in 1943.
Oh, boy.
Warren Zevon, 1947. He passed away quite a long time ago, didn't he?
He sure did. Yeah, that's cancer, I think, brought him down.
John Belushi, drugs brought him down.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in 1949. And America's sweetheart, Mary Lou Retton, was born in 1968, the 1984 gymnast. All right, Frankie, not a lot of concerts going on right now, but in March, on the 4th, the Marshall Tucker Band, Friday night, MGM Northfield Park. The Hotel California Tour, the Eagles, it's a smashing success. They're going to be bringing their Hotel California Tour to the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse on March 17th, Thursday night. Sounds like a good St. Patrick's Day night, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
They'll play the entirety of the Hotel California album, take a little break, and then come back with the Greatest Hits package. Timothy B. Schmidt, Don Henley, Joe Walsh will be there, of course, Deacon Fry and Vince Gill in place of the late Glenn Frey. Should be another great show. Same night, MGM Northfield Park, Thursday, March 17th, Tower of Power, the Bay City Group. I'd love to see that show. Journey with special guest Toto, Saturday, May 7th, Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. And one just announced, Al Stewart with his backup band, Empty Pockets. They'll be the warm-up band, and then they stick around to back up Al Stewart. Hopefully he'll pluck a saxophonist out of the audience like he did last time. Kent Stage, those tickets will go fast. They went on sale last Friday, Frankie, and they'll be on sale for a while, but it only holds like 650 people, so it might sell out. Al's going to be 77 years old this year, but he's still touring here in the States Wednesday, May the 18th. Good shows coming up. Time for Download Discovery, Frankie. I love this category, and I think I started the podcast not because we were bored and needed something to do, but so I could talk about my favorite band today, Toad the Wet Sprocket. I've seen them a few times, I'm sure I told you, in concert.
Sure.
We're going to go this summer, aren't we?
Absolutely. I can't wait.
They'll be at Nautica Stage with Gin Blossoms, another one of my favorite 90s
That's
groups.
That's right.
And your favorite,
Barenaked Ladies. Sure.
Looking forward to that. The album is called New Constellation. And the group is Toad, the Wet Sprocket, Dean Denning, Todd Nichols, and lead singer guitarist Glenn Phillips, who, by the way, plays in concert in bare feet.
Oh, nice.
They bring out a rug for him, roll it out, and he plays. Randy Gus is also was the drummer. He left the band a few years ago. But by and large, they stayed together till they got since they got together in 1986. They've really been together. Now, they stopped really recording in around 2000 or so, but didn't announce a true breakup. But
okay.
Columbia Records, who signed these guys when like Glenn was just out of high school, dropped them from their label, as was the case in a lot of artists in the early 2000s.
Sure.
And so the whole landscape changed. So they were looking around for some money to raise because they wanted to do a new album in like 2009.
I remember it well.
They played some gigs, some here and there, maybe a TV show or whatever, guest spot. So they wanted to put a new album out, but they didn't have any money. So they went to something called Kickstarter. I guess that was a forerunner of GoFundMe.
Really?
And they asked their fans if they is there any chance for their record label, Abe's Records, that they could maybe raise $50,000 to put this together. By the time it was done, they raised over $260,000 with 6,300 contributors.
Wow.
Talk about a loyal following, too. If you ever see one of their shows, that place would be packed with Toad fans. So their first full-length studio release since Coil in 1997 brought us New Constellation. Great tunes on there, too, called California Wasted, The Moment, Golden Age, which in a longer set they'll play those songs. But mm-hmm. the one I really like is I'll Bet on You. At their concert in 2018, they were all alone. They played the whole 22-song set or something. So I'll Bet on You was an up-tempo number. I think you're really going to like it. It comes from New Constellation. And if you ever see them for a longer set, they'll play that song maybe as an encore. So
nice.
It's the album is New Constellation. It's Toad the Wet Sprocket. And by the way, I did a meet and greet with them once and got poster.
Oh, that's
their
nice.
25th or their 30th anniversary or something. So my wife and I got a chance to meet them out at MGM Northfield. It's a good show then, too. What you got for me?
Well, let's see here. A group by the name of The Hello People doing a song called Future Shock. Okay, since when do mimes sing? Well, when they're the Hello People, I guess it's okay. This song comes from their 1974 album, The Handsome Devils. It is the lead-off song on the album and briefly hit the Billboard Top 100. By the mid-70s, the band was touring as Todd Rundgren's backup band, believe it or not.
That's right. In fact, they played at Back to the Bars.
Absolutely. Yeah. And making pop-oriented, though eclectic, records. Future Shock was produced by Todd and features a lot of progressive rock and synthesizer that we would hear later on his own initiation album of the next year.
That's right.
Download this one for a perfect little memory from my graduation, high school graduation year.
Wow. The Hello People, the rock group from New York City, formed in 1967, part of that anti-war movement of the 60s and 70s. So when they came around for that 1974, that was one of the saving graces of that year for you, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there wasn't much to say about 74, but that's a fun little song.
We're going to be bringing back our Spotlight Year next episode with Stevie Wonder. I think that's when it's going to be on, and we're going to have a little twist to it. It'll be fun, but and we won't do them in order, but I thought it was a lot of fun originally going through the years, and our Spotlight Year will be 1975. That's when, as you said, everybody came out. We'll talk a little bit about that in our next episode. One Hit Wonder time, Frankie. Remember Shy Coltrane?
I remember the song.
The female singer, pianist from Racine, Wisconsin, had a One Hit Wonder called Thunder and Lightning. I thought she would do more. She sounded a little bit like Cher or maybe a forerunner of Ann Wilson, real powerful voice.
Yeah, definitely.
And she was kind of in and out. So father of a German violinist, song peaked at number 17 in mid-November 1972, spent 13 weeks on the chart, but the follow-up song, Go Like Elijah, didn't do so well. In fact, it didn't chart at all.
No, it's too bad.
In the late 70s, Shy moved to Europe and was part of that new wave music coming out of Europe. Then put out a few more albums, which she also produced, but really didn't hit it back here in the States again.
No.
Shy Coltrane, it's spelled C-H-I Coltrane, by the way. And Master Jack. Remember Four Jacks and a Jill?
Wow, what a great name.
They are going to be making a comeback in our psychedelic versus pop segment in just a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Also had a cut on that album called Timothy, Not the One by the Boys. Number 18 was Master Jack in the summer of 68. The follow-up song, Mr. Nico, didn't fare so well. It barely cracked the top 100 here in the U.S., hitting only number 96 on the Billboard Hot 100. In August of 68, I had to do a little digging on my Billboard 60s book to even find it. Pop group from South Africa who look more like the Cowsills, you know? Partridge Family without the moms, you know? Or maybe the kids that you grew up with on the street that were kind of hanging out, the clean-cut kids from down the street or over on Lincoln or something like that. So Master Jack by Four Jacks and a Jill made quite an impression on you, I can tell.
Absolutely.
Rock releases the week of January 24th. Some good ones, Frankie. Love Stinks. Jay Giles Band, 1980.
That was a great record, and that was really started their breakout, which would, with Freeze Frame, the next one, really break them wide open.
Moon Dance by Van Morrison. That's a good one.
Great.
Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player, Elton John, 1973.
The soundtrack of 73,
Two albums came out the same day in 1970. Chicago, the second album, they didn't call it the second album, though, did they at the time?
No, I think it was just called Chicago, but it just kind of became that way after, after a few years. And then the next one was called The Three, so I guess that meant the other one was two.
And the other one was Bridge Over Troubled Water, Simon and Garfunkel, 1970.
My, what a great record.
Yeah, Paul Simon, a couple years later, debuted with his Paul Simon debut, his self-titled album, White Light, White Heat, Velvet Underground, 1968.
What a great record that was. 30th.
And Journey, the live album, Captured, was released in 1981 on January the 30th.
Great.
All right, Frankie, on January 24th, 1970, these were the top five singles. I had no idea a whole lot of love did this well on a singles chart, but Zeppelin really did it. That was probably the highest charting song of theirs by far.
It was by far the highest chart, and it's kind of unusual because that's one of their heavy hitters, and I didn't think it would have done that well, but
it
was odd times. Let's put it that way.
Diana Ross and the Supremes, number four, was with Someday We'll Be Together, and they never really were they?
No,
after that?
No, pretty much.
Jackson 5, I Want You Back, that was number one, whether a former or future or something. By the way, we're going to have a new category very soon. Artists that debuted at number one.
That's
right. And you'd be surprised who's not on that list. Two of them we just talked about. Not the Supremes, not Michael Jackson as solo artist, not Chuck Berry. Elvis and the Beatles, of course, you would expect that. But there are a lot of groups that didn't, and a lot of other groups that you're like, really?
Yeah, exactly.
Starland Vocal Band leaps to mind. The number one song of the week was B.J. Thomas, Raindrops.
Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, The Supremes, and Whole Lot of Love in the same top five. That's incredible.
Number two was Venus by The Shocking Blue.
This is the last one they actually recorded together, and fantastic record.
Good stuff. Psychedelic versus pop. We'll find a week in 1967 or 8 or 9, and we'll give you a song that was true psychedelic, and then we'll give you a song right next to it on the charts that maybe Wixie was even playing with back-to-back that is far away from psychedelic as you can get.
Absolutely.
So in 1968, June 28th, Master Jack by Four Jacks and a Jill was number 38, and what was number 37?
Well, 37 was Hurdy Gurdy Man by none other than Donovan Leitch.
Boy, talk about a 180.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Donovan wrote Hurdy Gurdy Man while he was in Rishikesh, India. Now, that's, you know, the definition of psychedelic.
Right.
The recording features a harder sound than Donovan's usual material with distorted guitars and aggressive drums. It also features an Indian influence with the use of the tambura, a gift to Donovan from George Harrison, who also helped write some of the lyrics. There is some dispute, however, regarding the musicians who performed the song. It may have been as many as three future Led Zeppelin bandmates, Jimmy Page, John Paul Jones, and John Bonham on the final track.
Well, they are great session musicians. I wonder if Donovan thought of Master Jack by the Four Jacks and a Jill as one of his possible influences.
Yeah, same side of the ocean.
That's true. Now get this. We talked about how certain songs make a gigantic leap up the charts. The week before, which would have been the week of June 21st, 1968, Hurdy Gurdy Man by Donovan. Great title.
Oh, yeah.
That's just screams psychedelic.
Definitely.
Went from number 76 all the way to 37.
Wow, that's a big move.
Won't be long, Frankie. We'll be talking about groups we wanted to hear more from, and this time around, Pete Ham and Bad Finger will be our featured artist.
That's a great one.
So we have a brand new category. I really like it. It's called Best Instrumentals. Frankie and I have been turning you on to some stuff you may or may not know. This one you probably do. In fact, I have the single. I also have the follow-up single as well from the TV show SWAT.
Oh, yeah.
Special Weapons and Tactics.
Yeah. Done by none other than Rhythm Heritage. Mm-hmm. This is the definition of a guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
Who is Rhythm Heritage? Who cares? Okay, they're a bunch of typical bunch of production folks and session musicians who took the 1975 TV theme song written by Barry Devorzin and funked it up did a funked up disco version of it.
Yeah.
Helped by the fact that all things disco had become red hot, it was released and climbed all the way up to number one on the charts. Believe it or not, and I didn't believe this, it was the first TV theme to reach the top spot.
I did not know that.
I did not know
that.
Not
even Hawaii 5-0.
Exactly. It's just that kind of
a
song.
Yeah, it's a really cool song. You know, it took a while for this song to gain any strength. It was on the Hot 100 chart for 9 weeks before it could even crack the top 40. Then it was on its way. It was languishing in the 90s and 80s. And then I guess when the show...
And usually that means it's not going anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
But the show, I guess, like Starsky and Hutch, like Charlie's Angels that debuted in 75, Happy Days was gigantic, so everybody was watching ABC. It took a little while for people to get with the show.
Absolutely.
Once they did, they liked that theme song, and up went that single, and it did peak at number one in February of 76, the last week of winter of February that year. It knocked out Paul Simon's 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover.
Oh,
so it had
that's
interesting. Some real strength,
yeah.
You know, the follow-up hit, Beretta's theme, remember Keep Your Eye on the Sparrow?
Oh, absolutely.
That was their theme. That was the theme that they followed up with, which I also have that single. I probably still have it on ABC Dunhill Records.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it right now. Spring and Summer of 76 was the top 20 hit, Beretta's theme. It was co-produced by our old friend Michael Omardian, who worked with Christopher Cross and Donna Summer, Pete Cetera, and many others. He played keyboards on this one as well.
Oh, okay.
The one I'm going to talk about is another theme song from Hill Street Blues. Mike Post, hit number 10 in the fall of 81, features the great work of Larry Carlton, the smooth jazz guitarist.
Yeah.
Mike Post also scored a top 10 hit a few years earlier with Rockford Files. In fact, he's done hundreds of TV theme songs, L.A. Law, Law & Order, NYPD Blue, Magnum P.I., many more.
The soundtrack to my life.
Yeah. One of his first TV jobs was as musical director for The Andy Williams Show, which is saying something,
absolutely,
at age 24 years old. Kind of like David Foster, you know? Won Grammys for Best Instrumental Composition for not only Hill Street Blues, but also 7 years later for L.A. Law. It's a tremendous song. I really like it. It's so funny because the show, it just kind of brings you in. It just draws you in. That song just doesn't fit the tone of nature of that show at all, but it's
exactly. Just
perfect when you watch it. When you see one episode, you know why that theme song is there.
Why it fits,
it's just such
yeah.
a cool song. And that was back in the day, like L.A. Law, when the theme songs were like 2.5 minutes because they had to introduce the whole cast ensemble.
They were really hits, too. I mean, they were on the chart.
Featured artist time, Frankie, in our continuing series called Bands We Wish We Heard More From. The Welsh band known originally as the Ivies, then known as Badfinger.
That's right.
One of those bands we thought were maybe the Beatles. They were on the Apple label, which probably led to their undoing, their demise, even though they were signed to Warner Brothers later on and had a nice record deal with them. You know, they had a lot of influence from the Beatles. George Harrison, Paul McCartney helped them out, and they recorded 5 albums for the label and toured extensively until they were caught up in all those legal issues among...
That's right.
And not only them, but a lot of other groups. James Taylor was originally signed, then he got out, went to Warner Brothers, which is what Badfinger wound up doing. But even the Beatles got all embroiled in those legal issues.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You've said many times, as a corporation, they were dealing with the Beatles.
That's right.
Pete Ham, Mike Gibbons, Joey Molland, and Tom Evans, who co-wrote the number one hit Without You by Nielsen in early 1972. Then later on, Bob Jackson joined the band. Great hits, great singles, No Matter What, Baby Blue, Come and Get It, and Day After Day, produced by George. And Leon Russell played piano on that. A couple other singles which didn't do too well, and then it was over.
Yeah, and it was over quick.
In 1970, in November, No Dice was released. That was written by the song No Matter What. That's a good tune. That was written by Pete Ham. Just after that, on the same side of the album, was their rendition of Without You, which would be a big hit for Nielsen.
Yeah, and it would, you know, years later, Mariah Carey again took it to high heights on the charts.
Sure, as she normally would. Todd Rundgren produced the album Straight Up in December of 71, so they were really getting some juice underneath them, weren't they? Baby Blue,
absolutely.
You know, and Day After Day, again written by Pete Ham. Joey Mallon, produced by George Harrison. Badfinger, Love Is Easy and I Miss You, 1974. I'll tell you, though, after Day After Day, I kind of lost track of Badfinger.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did. They had troubles with the band and had troubles just putting everything together. They were kind of falling apart at that point.
So the album Badfinger, produced by Chris Thomas on their new label, Warner Brothers, they had just signed a 3-year, 6-album deal. Albums in 3 years, plus extensive touring. That's enough to...
Now, how are you going to do that?
Make anybody's mind spin.
Sure.
It only peaked, the album did, at 161 in the Billboard album chart in 1974. Wish You Were Here in 1974, also in December. That's not the Pink Floyd one.
No. Definitely not.
Their 7th studio album by the band. Some of this was recorded at the famous Caribou Ranch in Chicago,
in Colorado.
And again, produced by Chris Thomas. But they had a dispute with Warner, and the label pulled the album from the stores after just a few weeks of sales, making this album extremely rare.
Okay.
If you have it, hang on to it. If your sister still has it, take it from her. After this album, Pete left the band, but only... Warner Brothers was upset about this when they found out they were going to pull the plug on the whole thing. And so he came back reluctantly. They actually recorded a new album called Head First, not the one by the Babies, but their own, which wouldn't be released until 24 years later.
Is that true?
Okay. Pete Ham hanged himself. The legal issues and the financial difficulties of the band in 1975. Sad, sad story.
Yeah, and he blamed in his, you know, his note, his suicide note, he blamed the management group and, you know, the people that were running them for actually taking their money and called them terrible bastards. And
Warner Brothers was wondering what happened to about $100,000 that was in Badfinger's account. They didn't know what happened to it.
Really?
So there was some fishy stuff going on there, and it led to Pete Ham's untimely death. It's just so sad. Talk about talented guy.
Very talented. It's a shame that he didn't hang on, because there were good things that were going to happen, especially with, you know, Without You. I mean, just think of the royalties just on that one song over the years, if he'd just kind of hung on.
And a lot of times, if they just took a break, if they were allowed to take a 2-year hiatus, maybe two or a little bit, just kind of get their legs under them and start writing some good stuff again.
Right.
The 70s unfolding, they might have come out with something non-disco, but good rock and roll, like, say, Bad Company did, or Foreigner.
Sure, absolutely.
It would have been fun to see. We were kind of robbed of that, but, I mean, when you consider us being robbed versus Pete Ham losing his life over kind of being embroiled in all these difficulties, it's just sad.
Yeah, it is one of the tragic moments of rock and roll, and you wish you could, you know, reach back in time and just, you know, tell the guy, hey, we're going to make it, we're going to make it, but it's... anybody who's in that position knows that it sometimes it seems like you're not going to make it.
Yeah, there's no way out.
Exactly.
And you have record companies knocking at your door, or maybe the IRS or something, or the
Absolutely.
Tax man in England.
Exactly, the tax man, and you're wondering where all that money went, because you know that they had hit records. Yeah. And
it's hard to get that back. You can't just replicate No Matter What and Baby Blue. You can write some new tunes, but they may or may not sell.
Exactly.
Especially a few years later. So sometimes you have a not so happy ending to our We Wish We Had Heard More From category. If you guys come up with something you'd like to hear maybe more from, a group, even a band that we didn't know a lot about, but you would like to have heard more from.
Sure.
For me, it may be the Gin Blossoms or something we talked about in the 90s, but they had one of the members of their band also die by suicide. So feel free to pass it along to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations, because I'd like to continue the We Wish We Had Heard More From category.
Yeah, that's a good one.
As season five starts to unfold down the road, you know, we're going to talk about World Series of Rock, and our usual rock artists will be featuring like John Mellencamp and Rush and Yes, and so we're going to have some really good features too. We're going to round out season four with Stevie Wonder next week. Should be a good conversation.
Nice.
We'll do that next week. Frank, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next week on Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations.